Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Reggie Bush being welcomed back into the family at USC. College football headed in the right direction. If you're somebody who is excited about seeing the teams possibly playing, summer is upon us. Why not? Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network. You going to go surfing this summer?
I'm going to go surfing this afternoon.
Do you go? How often do you go? How often do you go? Because if I could surf, I had a beach near me, I just drive around with a surfboard on top of my car just to, so I could say I surfed.
Yeah, it's tough. I've got a rule because we got a 5-year-old, and I'm like, anytime you ask, I'll take you, unless it's like really big. And then he asks every day, you know. So you're like, you want to go, but he's not a great swimmer. So we basically just kind of. Like, I don't really surf. I just kind of take them in, and we get on a board together.
Yeah.
But I probably go on my own 2-3 times a week, and I try to do it super early. So I'm going to go tomorrow. I'm going to drive up to Rincon. It's my favorite spot near Santa Barbara. It's an epic longboard spot. So I don't know. As often as I can, man, it's my place to disconnect, to reconnect is how I describe it.
What is it like to be a college football player right now? Because I know that you took a glimpse on the Pac-12 Network podcast into the world of USC football. What is it like right now?
Yeah, good question. I just got off the phone with Carl Durrell and Bernard Muir, athletic director at Stanford and Colorado's head coach, respectively, and had asked them that and have interviewed a bunch of players or talked to them on the side. And I think it's a brilliant time to be a college football player. I think back to when I played, you didn't say boo, because you didn't want to get out of line within your position group. I wasn't good enough. Like, I'm sure Larry Fitzgerald could have said whatever he wanted and been just fine because he was that talented. But that's a very small group back in that time. And I think even when I coached or 5 years ago, and now players have a platform because of social media. And because of recruiting, they have a base, you could argue a fan base, or people that will follow what they say. And now every coach I've talked to is doing an incredible job of guiding and mentoring these young men and educating them on how to use it. So I think it's an amazing time if you do those things. And I think a lot of them are, man. I mean, whether it's Amon-Ra St. Brown on Instagram going, through his protest and what he wrote, or, players all across the footprint, let alone the country. It's been beautiful to watch, and I think it's just getting warmed up. So it's tricky and it's tough with COVID-19 not being around your team, but with everything that's gone on recently around racism in this country and athletes using their platforms and their voice, I think it's really powerful, and I'm inspired by it.
Yogi Roth with us, Pac-12 Network. USC has ended Reggie Bush's disassociation from the school. Always felt like he was harshly judged, especially as we view, sort of the transgressions through today's world. What do you make of Reggie coming back to the USC family?
I love it. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I was on the staff with Reggie. I've worked out with Reggie. I watched him train. I've obviously stayed in touch with him as his media careers began, being out here on the West Coast. He's always been the hardest practice player I've ever seen. He's the hardest worker I've ever seen and the most gifted player at his position that I've ever seen. He's dynamic. And then if you've ever been around him, he's a one percenter in terms of he walks into the room, everybody turns, right? I don't know if you were at the Pac-12 title a couple of years ago, Stanford versus USC, and it was at the Niner Stadium, and Reggie, I think, was with the Niners, so he could be there because it wasn't like a USC home game. And he just stood outside the locker room, and I remember Clay Helton saying, I was trying to talk to the team, and there was no chance because guys are trying to take selfies in pregame because Reggie walked in. And this is SC with, I think, all the guys, Curtis Conway, Willie McGinnis, Lynn Swann was the AD at the time. Like, and legend, Carson, ain't nobody, nobody is like Reg because of how everybody grew up watching him do what he did in L.A. when SC and Coach Carroll and our program was rolling. And then I would like to think everybody from Tuscaloosa to Los Angeles would agree that the punishment put on USC from what Reggie was a part of was inappropriate based on what goes on pretty regularly at certain elements of college football that's been proven. And I think I think it's an injustice on Reggie to a certain degree. And, he had to deal with what he dealt with because it wasn't all above board, obviously. But to have him back is the right move. It has been so celebrated in L.A. I can't tell you how many messages I've got from huge USC donors, boosters, fans, and it's right. And Reggie's a good guy. He's someone that is going to be a role model and has been for student-athletes in past years and will be for years to come.
USC got a two-year postseason ban, 14 vacated victories, including the national championship in 2004. They lost 30 scholarships. And then Reggie Bush had to be disassociated for 10 years. That ends today. How much do you look at the ban of the postseason, the loss of scholarships? How much of that plays into USC struggling, and how much of it is that the rest of college football just made better decisions than USC?
I think it's huge, and I don't think that I don't think there's an argument to that, and I'll tell you why. So, recruiting. I remember when I was on the staff and we sat in the recruiting, you kind of sit and you watch guys and you're like, who do we offer? Who don't we offer? And I remember sitting next to Coach Carroll because for whatever reason, you sit next to me and he would kind of teach me about what he would see. I did this for 4 years. And he would often say, all right, what do we think about this guy? And Garrett Green is the perfect example, if you remember him. He was a quarterback out of Southern California. He was Notre Dame High School. And he was offered a bunch of places, including Harvard, including UCLA. And I remember us having the exact conversation of, do we want to play against Garrett Green? He might not ever beat out, I don't know if it was like Mark Sanchez or John David Booty, and ever start here at quarterback, but do we want to play against him? And we didn't. Because he was a dual threat, athletic quarterback, really smart young man, we said, all right, let's go get him. And that's what would happen. So we would take guys, and Garrett Green was probably the best scout team quarterback for a couple of years for us, never started a game. I think he threw one touchdown pass on like a double pass. Might have even been in the Rose Bowl. I can't remember. But that's what it was, right? So then the sanctions hit, and you couldn't go do that anymore. And as the sanctions hit, Pac-12 Networks came, and as Pac-12 Networks came and the rights deals changed, all of a sudden schools could hire coaches, hire coordinators, upgrade facilities, and take those players. And SC couldn't. He couldn't go anymore. I remember when Lane was building his recruiting classes, so many guys he wanted to take, and they wanted to come, but he had 14 scholarships or whatever it was at the time to offer in a respective class. So it hurt it in the immediate with the numbers and how do you tackle in training camp, but it hurt down the road because SC didn't get to have just their arms around everybody, right? Because that's what it was. And then here comes Chip Kelly. Here comes, a couple of the other programs. Here comes David Shaw and Jim Harbaugh. And all of a sudden, you didn't get everybody that you normally got. So that's, to me, flattened or leveled the playing field to a degree among the upper echelon programs. And every time I hear, SC should just smoke everybody because they're in L.A., like, you're just kind of blocking out, like, a large part of history in college football where the other teams became the teams, right? Oregon or Stanford, it was UW. Since SC's reign, those three teams have had one or two runs at being the marquee program, and SC really only had it for a year since then, and that was when Darnold was rolling against Penn State.
Reggie's going to be welcomed home to USC. They're going to put their arms around him. Should Reggie take accountability? Should Reggie go public and say, look, I realize now, looking back, I'm sorry, I caused a lot of harm to USC. Does he need to own some of that?
Yeah, I don't think he's ever, I might have missed it, but I don't know if I've ever seen anything where he's kind of said what's really happened, right? We all know what we perceive to have happened. Right, which is, someone in his family accepting money, and everybody's kind of read it. They know the nitty gritty of it, but we've never really heard it from him, his mouth, of what happened. Like, did he get manipulated? Right? Did he just try to do it to, shut somebody up because he didn't want to sign with that agent? Right? There's a lot of things that we can speculate on that we don't know. And yeah, I think it'd be good for everybody just to kind of hear, because it's going to benefit college football, right? He did a nice article with Bruce Feldman, I think it was last week or the week before, in The Athletic, where he talked about name, image, and likeness and things of that nature. So, and I don't think Reggie's the type of guy to never take accountability, not at all. But I think in the same sentence, I'd like college football to take accountability that USC has never been just paying players. I mean, think about all the rumors that came out when the Reggie thing happened. It hasn't stopped. And I was there, man. Like it's such BS compared to what, at least what you hear from people in the industry around other elements of college football. So I do think, yes, he needs to, because it's his life and it's his story. And if it was me, I wouldn't want people speculating on me half the time, or more than half the time in his case. But I also think that college football needs to also do him his service and say, you know what? Yeah, like, we jumped to a ton of conclusions about a program because they were rolling. And the report would even say that back in the day. Like, we had it going so good, and Pete had such a special thing going that I think it's safe to say there were some jealous people on that you know, in those decision rooms about our program at the time and how good it was. And to me, at least, man, being there, living it, being as close to that program as probably anybody because of what I got to do with Coach Carroll, we were always above board. You know, I never saw one thing that was not. And I'll go to my deathbed saying that.
Reggie Bush was so fun to watch. It was like a video game. People say that over and over. What was he like in practice?
Dominant. I mean, John, I don't even think you I'll describe our practices, but it doesn't do it justice. You know, by far the most competitive environments I've ever seen on any practice field, including, and I've been around Super Bowl teams and been on the practice field and been in intimate settings like that. And nothing like it, because every snap, it was on the line. It was your pride. It was your reputation. It was your playing time. And for Reggie, it was every day nonstop. I mean, he would finish 30, 40, 50 yards on every run. He would try to run through human beings, not just arm tackles. And he elevated everyone. And he got coached hard. And Todd McNair really developed his career as a running back, as a pass catcher out of the backfield, his patience on special teams. So you got to give him credit there. But I've never seen anybody walk onto a practice field every day with the talent he had and celebrity status he had. I mean, we had police officers, you know, security guards walking him and Leinart to practice, let alone around campus to a large degree, when he was just totally different. And he didn't believe his own hype by any one stretch of the imagination. You know, him and Lendell, they would roll. Who's going to compete harder? Who's going to be the back? You know, and then you on the other side, it was Clay and Cushing and Kaluka and, you know, all the guys on the defensive side, Kevin Ellison, Lawrence Jackson, I mean, Frosty Rucker, guys that played for a long time in the league. And you brought in, Pete, it was ones-on-ones all the time. It was special, and I hope SC just puts out some of his practice film for young guys to watch. This is the best I've ever seen.
This would be the time. Yogi Roth is with us, Pac-12 Network. I wrote last week about Mario Cristobal, and I just think he's wired in a way that, you know, the messaging, overcome adversity, all of that. Of course, he's recruited well. I kind of feel like his window is now opening. Who are the contenders, the contenders for the top of the Pac-12 as you see it in the next couple of seasons?
Yeah, I read that piece, and I love that. I'm a huge, huge Mario Cristobal fan. I think this conference is going to be really fun, because SC is rolling right now in recruiting, right? They've kind of, and that's how it works, right? Like, Oregon came in and, you know, did a really nice job in Southern California the last two plus seasons or so. And then now let's go take it back, right? And that's the narrative. Kids want to get behind that type of thing. That's why I think sustained success is so challenging in this league, let alone anywhere else in college football. But to answer your question, it's Oregon's league right now, and you got to give it to them just based on what they've done, you know, and how they've played. USC, to me, is going to be really impressive this year because they're built down the middle of their defense. I mean, it's really impressive. I think they've got the best defensive line coming back right now. And granted, we didn't get to see anybody in spring ball, but from what you have on tape and what the roster is, they're impressive. You have to still talk about Washington. If you look at their last two defensive line classes, you know, you could maybe even take three. They're awesome, man. I mean, they're getting guys that are SEC caliber defensive linemen, in my opinion, from, you know, their evaluation on high school film. And the way they've recruited, I think Jimmy Lake, he's got energy just like Mario. You know, he's not going to slow down one drop. And then Stanford to me is really intriguing because they've built a really impressive program, of course, over the tenure of David Shaw. And no one wants to talk about like how young they've been the last 2 years and what they've dealt with. And I think they burned 21 freshmen's redshirt last year. And one might say, well, yeah, everybody does because of the 4-game rule. Like they average like 7, every single year heading into this year. But everybody got hurt. So they've got so many linemen. And when they have linemen, look out. They've got Davis Mills, who I think is the purest passer in the conference. Nobody wants to necessarily say that, but he's dynamic. And there's a lot of guys in that conversation, but when he's on, it's really fun to watch. So those are the ones. And then you got to look out for ASU and Utah. I mean, they're really coming right now. And then you'll have sleepers the rest of the way, right? Cal, can they be explosive enough really to take the thing over? I don't know. We'll find out. And then the same thing with UCLA. They're kind of like the biggest question mark coming into year 3 under Chip Kelly. Like, will they be the biggest surprise this year in the conference? I don't know, but I'm looking forward to hopefully watching them in training camp.
How much stock do you put in returning offensive coordinator, returning quarterback, sort of that tandem? And I think about Cal immediately when that comes to mind, and I wonder about Oregon, who will break in a new quarterback at starter and break in a new coordinator in Joe Moorhead.
Well, I think you got to go SC all day long on that. Because to your point of returning coordinator, even Cal, they changed their coordinator up.
That's
so,
right.
You know, Arizona State changes their coordinator up. And so I would go the Trojans all day just because of the air raid, Keaton Slovis. I believe this, and I learned this from Coach Shaw, that when a quarterback room has 3 quarterbacks in it, it's the healthiest because everybody feels as though they have a shot. Hmm. And you can kind of breathe in that room. The egos can breathe a little bit. Even though JT left to Georgia, JT Daniels, Keaton Slovis, he's got the keys to that thing. So I would go there just because everywhere else, Washington State, they're different. Utah doesn't have a quarterback. That would be that. And then I'd probably go next UCLA, to be honest, just because of Chip and Dorian. You know, Dorian's flashed. It's the same system. Him and Dana Bible and Chip have been on it. So he should have true mastery. And let's remember, this is going to be his 4th season ever playing the position because he only played as a senior in high school. So he's had a learning curve. But those are the guys. But I'm probably most excited for Tyler Shuck, to be quite honest with you, just because I've been on that kid since he was in high school. Joe Moorhead was at Pitt when I was there. I love that duo and can't wait to watch and see how that thing flushes out.
It's weird to me because I keep thinking, like, if, you know, you lose a Justin Herbert, normally you go, hey, they're in big trouble. They just lost, a top 2 pick or top 5 pick in the draft. And now, but with Tyler Shuck and Moorhead and then clearly Penei Sewell at left tackle, I think Oregon's identity will still be wrapped in let's run the football, let's play defense, and Tyler make some plays.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this thing's rolling, man. I mean, to your point, the way they've even recruited on the offensive line, I have a board on my wall I'm looking at now with every returning player at every position, and I've highlighted in red like some studs. And you look at the old linemen, like some of them never played, but you know how special they are because of all the 5th-year seniors they had last year. You look at some of the receivers. J.R. Waters, to me, in that freshman class, I had him as my #1 overall receiver in the Pac-12 coming out of high school. And you never got to see him because he got injured and hurt his foot, I think it was, in training camp. So they're loaded, man. And then defensively, look out. So, yeah, your point, I think you bring Tyler along, but I don't know if you got to bring him along, you know, really slowly. I think you trust the program, right? This is what it was when I was at SC, and this is why I love the situation so much, is you come, you sit, and when you play, you don't learn on the job necessarily. You can thrive. And you're going to learn from experiences in 2-minute and 4-minute and backed up and, you know, certain game situations that you can't really replicate, but it's not as though they don't know what they have. In Tyler, in my opinion. And he's getting pushed, right? They bring in a grad transfer from Boston College who's a really talented player. And it's a new coordinator, so he's got to prove himself to Joe Moorhead. So, I'm all in on this program and the culture they've built. And to your point of your article, they're positioned well to be able to come out of this thing that everybody's had to deal with and still be a little bit ahead of the curve in my eyes.
He's a walking quote machine. Mario Cristobal, and again, I can feel, you know, I ask him what he's reading, and then I go read the books behind that, and I go, oh, that's where he got that. You know, you could tell that he's like a sponge right now, And I just wonder, he still feels like a young head coach to me. I know he's not a young person, you know, he's closer to 50 than a typical young coach would be, but I still feel him kind of finding his way.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I remember when he was at his first stop, was it FAU or Florida International? One of the schools down in Florida. And I remember going down there because I was spent a lot of time at the University of Miami learning from that staff, and you hear about him, you know, and then the Pitt job opened up and he was a huge name, or Rutgers job was opened up and he's a huge name. And, you know, he's had so many experiences. Then you look at him as a player, what he was around. I just think that we're some of our parts. And I do think, yeah, you're always growing, but I don't know if you'd agree, but when I was there, when Willie Taggart was the coach, I remember I went up for spring ball because I was like, I just got to meet these guys. And I sat in on when Coach Cristobal did his media, and I was like, wow, this guy's impressive. You know, and then you listen to him talk to his players and stand behind the old line drill, and you're like, wow, this guy's impressive. And then you talk to anybody who's played with him, and they're like, wow, he's impressive. So, yeah, is every head coach probably learning more and more and more? Yeah, I totally agree with that. Has he arrived as, like, you know, Nick Saban and some of the blue bloods in college football? No, because of just the amount of time. But I think he can be that guy, and I think that he thinks that Oregon can be that place. And that's probably the most exciting for Ducks fans, and I know it is for me, being a guy who's calling our games on the Pac-12 Network every week.
That's awesome. Yogi, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for spending so much time with us.
Hey, man, I'm just going to keep offering the olive branch. Like, when you want to paddle in, we
I'm
go.
There.
So you
All
just
right.
got to do it, man. It's been like
All right.
4 years, I feel like I've been saying to come on.
All right, let's do it. I'm going to do it. All right, Yogi, I'll get in touch with you. Thank you, man. Appreciate you joining us.
Safe.
All right, leave it here. Tomorrow on the radio show, Oregon offensive coordinator Joe Moorhead. I'm also efforting Oregon State offensive coordinator Brian Lindgren. Try to have both of them on the show. Petros Papadakis, he's never boring. He's coming up next. I want you to also text BFT to 484848 if you want to join Team Canzano.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.